is controlled in this interpreter by a control block, like every other real-time programmer has ever used for process control. I basically have for each process the current program counter for where I am in the music or in the text for that process, and then I have three levels of subroutine calls with stack entries for each one. I have a next event time in measure and beat form. Measures are like a high order version of the time signature or the time representation, and then beat is the number of beats within this measure, this arbitrary measure, and this is used as my representation for things. I am able to set how many beats there are in each measure, so I have a way of doing this counting modulo any particular length I want. I actually use 240 because it has nice integer properties with most common time signatures. It's divisible by 6, it's divisible by 3, it's divisible by 4, and so it works out with a lot of, you know, hack type times to get a nice integer ratio. Then you use approximation with almost right integers for everything else, but at least for the major times of the music that'll work. And then I have various detail things like the current note that was just played, the last length that I used for this channel, and some other information like the origin of the process within memory so that I can restart the whole thing when I get to the end. Let's see. Is anybody keeping track of the time? How much time do I have? 10 minutes? Okay, I guess I'll shorten things up a little bit. The control of the interpreter is done through a command structure. And I'll just go over some of the interesting things I have put into it, things that may enable you to change timbre and to modify things within the music. One of the first things I put in was a waveform manipulation feature so that I could calculate waveforms rather than just putting them in ahead of time. I have a waveform definition which enables me to define in memory of the computer a waveform in 40 steps. So it's assumed that this is 42 bytes long, and it has a code that gets you into it. And symbolically, in the form constant bytes, it looks like WDEF, comma, I, and then a whole series of numbers for all the values of all the waveform versus time within those 40 steps. Then I have a command called waveform set, which sets up one of these waveforms. It just sends it out to the peripheral. Then I have a thing that will copy one of these waveforms into a temporary register. Then I can copy the temporary register out into the peripheral. And then I have something called divide and multiply, and what it is a left shift and a right shift on all the variable or all the values in the waveform as an array operation. And this enables me to scale things a little bit. It's a crude way of calculating, but it's easy to implement quickly. And then I have the facility to add waveforms together into this temporary. So what I can do is I can do a crude Fourier summing process by setting up a bunch of basis waveforms, which is what I have done with this version of the text. And these basis waveforms are added together, shifting at various points, and I end up with combination waveforms that are not what I started out with. And so that's what I do with that. Then for actually playing, I have the things that I already mentioned, which are just note codes. They just play the note and go on. I also have a way to set a note parameter before I go to a subroutine, increment and play the note parameter, decrement and play the note parameter, or just play the last value of the note parameter. Then I have some real-time commands which enable me to wait for an arbitrary increment of the measure parameter. I have a wait until arbitrary measure, set the length register to some value, set the tempo, increment and decrement the tempo, and then this is not, it should say time signature, not key signature here, set the time signature for the thing, number of beats per measure. Then I have a program control structure, begin subroutine, end subroutine, that defines a subroutine. I can call a subroutine by number. It's a very numerically oriented interpreter because it's a quick kludge and I have no symbol table yet. And then I have a facility to loop back to the beginning of the piece or to go to an arbitrary place in memory because I partitioned it in several segments. I had to put the go to in, much as various structured programming people would not like this. It's merely a linkage convention. And then one little miscellaneous thing, an oscilloscope trigger that uses one of the extra bits on my peripheral to just send a trigger to the oscilloscope so I can look at an envelope. The envelope processor is in software, is interrupt-driven, and it implements what is called a state machine. And the state machine basically has a number of states associated with it. In any given note, I start out with the attack. I can come down possibly to a sustain, which I'll hold, and then decay. But in the sustain, I want to cycle over a series of values over and over again, possibly, to do a vibrato effect. So I have the ability in the state machine. I start out at rest, initiate an attack, go into the attack state, and loop through all the variables of the attack, which is sort of looping through the list of values coming down there. When I get to the end of that list, which is specified in the software, I go into the sustain state, and I loop around, I go through the sustain state. If it's a staccato note, I immediately go into decay and fall off and go back into idle. If it's not a staccato note, at the end of sustain, I cycle back through the envelope, or go back to the beginning of the envelope and cycle through it again. And that's how I get a little vibrato effect you may have heard at a couple of places in this music. Then eventually I will hit the decay and fall down. It's a beautiful example of how to implement a state machine in software. The transitions are sequenced in this envelope processor by the number of interrupts I get at 4800 hertz, which I happen to have a 4800 hertz clock tied to an interrupt line in my processor. So that's how I sequence the time intervals. And I just count up the number of interrupts I have between each step value in the envelope, and that's how I sequence through it. So that's the envelope processor. And in terms of manipulating the envelope, I have some things in this little interpretive language which enable me to define an envelope as a table within the interpretive text, envelope number I, with D decay values, S sustain values, and A attack values. And this just is a text definition. It sets up a table in the interpreter pointing to wherever that was in the interpretive text. So I can redefine any of these things, waveforms, subroutines, envelopes at any time by just executing another command, and it will update the table with the latest version. I actually don't use that right now, but it's a nice concept. Then ESET just picks one of the envelopes I've defined. I have 16 possible envelopes that I can define with identified by a number. Envelope rate sets the speed with which I go through this envelope state machine as the number of interrupts per step, and it just sets that speed. The usable values that are musically valid are from, oh, perhaps 3 to 30 interrupts per step in the envelope. I can actually go up to 255, but then it would take all day to go through the envelope, and that's not necessarily musically valid. I can also modify the way the state machine behaves by setting up a flag that is either staccato or legato. And if it's staccato, the double asterisk indicates that we're just going down immediately through to the decay. And if it's legato, I just keep on going. And if I'm in the legato mode, I want to manually or under program control decide when an attack is going to occur and when a decay is going to occur. And so I have attack and decay commands to do that. Well, the net result of putting all this stuff together, designing this little, very simple interpreter, is summarized in the last slide I have. I ended up with a representation of the top notes, basically, of my piano score of Johann Strauss Waltz Vienna Life. It takes 2K bytes of information for the interpreter plus 2K bytes of setup information for this text, which include 16 waveforms, which are the sinusoids, which are fundamental through the sixth harmonic, are just tables of these things. They're sort of squashed into a 40-step shift register, and I used a programmable calculator to calculate them. You know, it's just I do the calculation of the sine and multiply it times 63, and I end up with a number that I'm stuffing in there. Sawtooth through the sixth harmonic, so I can use those as basis functions instead of the sine functions. And then a bias computation waveform, which is a 1/4 of the full amplitude, it enables me to patch up for something I left out of the shift and multiply instructions and normalize the waveform back to an almost DC level. So I minimize the transients that I used to have before I put that in there. And then something I called a weird square wave waveform, which it was in there once or twice, but I don't think I recognized it. This is just sort of an arbitrary thing I put in. And then I have 7 envelopes. I have a sharp spike, linear attack, and decay. And that's just going up and down at whatever my envelope rate is, with one going up and down through the range of 0 to 255. And I think I used an increment of 5 in the numbers, so the envelope was about 255 divided by 5. Let's see, that's about 50 steps long, yeah, times 2, it's 100 steps. Then I had a sharp attack followed by a slow decay, and I did that with 4 different sustain levels. So I went up and attacked, came down, and then the sustain was just a null thing. It didn't have any vibrato to it, so it has about 2 words long, so it's cycling through the same words all the time, and so it's a constant level. And then the decay was just a long, flat thing, and that was used several places in there. At the end, I sort of degenerated into just using that constantly. I had 4 sustain levels. That's how I do my volume control in this particular configuration. And then I had one version of a sharp attack followed by a slow decay, similar to this one, except at the sustain point, I put in a sinusoidal vibrato effect that was perhaps a range of 20 or 30, amplitude range of 20 or 30 in 255 steps at that point. So it's, you know, it's like adding to a constant value of 100 a sinusoid times an amplitude of 30. And then I guess that covers all the envelopes. I had 10 note length definitions for the common lengths, and as I mentioned before, I used 240 beats per measure because it has some nice properties with integers. You can divide it by 4, 3, 2, and things like that. It turns out to be a perfect number for the number of beats per measure for a lot of the common time signatures. And then I set up these 10 different note length definitions to include basically half note, quarter note, eighth note, 16th note, and 32nd note, and then triplets on all of those. And so I could do, you know, triplet within the next time up, typical musical interpretation. And then there were 4K bytes left over after these setup definitions, and that's where the actual musical text that referenced all these setups and the actual interpreter resided. And a total thing takes about 8K of memory for what you just heard. And I think I have probably have about, in that 8K region, I probably have about 1 or 2K, no, maybe 1, between a half and 1K left over. So I could expand a little bit in time. By using subroutines in the actual music, I end up compactifying the musical expression. The music, you know, comes with repeats and various standard things that you can set up ahead of time. And so I used that a little bit in this particular representation of the Strauss waltz. You know, instead of doing the repeats over and over again, I just said begin the subroutine, cycle through the subroutine first to define the subroutine, and then end subroutine, and then call the subroutine with the various envelope setups before I called. And there are other little tricks I used with this interpreter, which is a very crude interpreter, but it works. And that's my justification for doing it. And it took me about, somewhere between 2 weeks and a month to actually get the interpreter working in spare time with an assembler with in-core assemblies. I have a 28K 6800 system that I built myself. And the assembler has a 12K string area input for it and a 4K output area. And so I can just assemble through the terminal almost instantaneously. And this very much helped in the development process. And so it took about 2 weeks to a month of work on the actual software to make this. And then the actual colorations that you hear here, it's interesting, verbal redundancy. The things you were hearing, the various colorations and entering that music, as I mentioned before, took about 2 to 3 weeks of my assistant's time to actually sit down with this music and bang away at the ASCII keyboard and get all the steps that you see in there. My next project is to interface the music keyboard and make a real editor, which is what I really need to put in music conveniently, which I will need for my polyphonic synthesizer when I get that running in another month or two. Anyway, that's it. That's what a Klughorn is. And the next time I give a talk, I'll probably have some better music.
Hey, thank you, Carl. Have a slide. Okay. The last talk of our Music and Computers Part 1 is the Pipe Organ Microcomputer System by me. And let's get this out of the way. little bit about me. My name is Jeff Raskin, and I've been playing with computers and music, thank you, since 1957, which means I've been doing it for about 20 years. And I have a lot of experience with this. I started out in high school with a little toy computer called a Geniac. And the first thing I got it to do was to make up simple melodies. For a random generator, I had to flip a coin. Then you'd put that in, and you'd turn some more dials, and some little lights would light up, and you'd write down the notes coming out of it, and then you'd go to your piano and play them. Later, I worked with the Columbia-Princeton Computer Music Project, built the Pennsylvania State University Electronic Music Studio, taught electronic and computer music at Penn State and UC San Diego. I've been doing it for a long time. And I'm also more or less a professional musician. I play conventional instruments, like piano, for example. And after all of this work with computers and music, I say, hardware, schmardware, software, schmoftware. I can get more music out of one piano with 10 fingers and 25 years of practice than I can get out of all the computers and electronics I've ever had my hands on in 20 years of practice. There's also something else that I've discovered. A lot of the music that I've gotten out of electronic and computer systems, I'd be very happy to play into some other electronic and computer music system. When I'm playing music, music is a thing between people. I'm playing it for an audience. There's something I like, or I've come to really like, about actually performing a piece of music to an audience, reacting with it myself in real time, that's a computer word, and having the audience react back to me in real time. Well, I happen to love the sound of the pipe organ, the king of instruments, and when fortune had its wheel turning in the right direction, I found myself the proud purchaser of a 26-rank pipe organ. And I'm currently in the middle with a colleague of mine of building a house. So I can hold this pipe organ and play it. Hey. Now, since I've been dealing with computers a long time, and since pipe organs are largely electrical monsters, except for the very output of them, which is truly acoustical, and since they're very complicated, it became immediately apparent to me that the proper tool to use to run this whole monster was indeed a computer. After having bought the pipe organ, I couldn't afford the computer, and then along came the microcomputers, and voila, I could have everything I ever wanted to in my own living room. As a matter of fact, one last personal note, if you ever walk into my living room, there's probably around 15 keyboards, let me see, a teletype, and then a Beehive terminal, and another ASCII keyboard, and then an electric piano, and then a little organ, and then a regular piano, then an old organ built in 1868, and then a harpsichord. I'm a keyboard freak. Okay. Now, the first thing I'd like to explain is exactly why in the world you need a microcomputer with a pipe organ. And the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to build us a pipe organ so you can understand how they work inside. But first I should ask, how many people here know in detail how a pipe organ is organized? Good. Very few. Proportionally. Then you few will be bored. Let's see. I'm going to need a lot of volunteers. We're going to have to do this quickly because we don't have much time, remembering the time war that we were put into. Can I have three people for a keyboard? Just quickly. One, two, quickly. Third one. Okay. Sit right here and here. I want three of you sitting here. Okay. Hold out a hand like this, okay? Just see? This is one keyboard. Does anybody know what in a two manual organ what the lowest manual keyboard is, the one at the bottom? What is that called? Quiet. Well, in a two manual, so we only have great and swell. Which one? Great. Okay, you guys are great. Okay. It's right there. Can I have three more people? Quickly. One, someone. Two, a third person. Ah, a friend. Okay. Stand behind them. stand behind them. Okay. Okay. I think you're gonna have to be great. Come on right here, Mike. Okay. Could you stand up back there? Okay. And the other keyboard and a two keyboard organ is called the Swell Manual. You three guys are swell. Okay. Okay. Now, if you hold out your arms, this is a practice. Okay. See. Now we have an upper keyboard and a lower keyboard. Thank you. Okay. Now I'm going to do something very rank. We need. Okay. I'm not sexist, but it's a physiological fact that females have higher voices. Can I have three female persons for volunteers? One. We need two more. Two more. Three. Very, very good. Can you come up here and stand here, and here? Okay. These three people are representing a rank of pipes. A rank of pipes in an organ is a set of pipes all having roughly the same timbre or sound quality, each one at a different pitch. And I'm going to pretend that these three people are a rank, say, Blockflute rank, and they go chweep. If you could you please just, I know this is funny here, but could you just go twee? Just try. Twee. Very good. Okay. That's the rank of pipes. Now. Now, what happens is that each key on a manual, and here we have the great manual and the swell manual, is connected to a pipe. And the basic idea is this. Now, when I press this key, you go twee, okay? And could you make as low a twee as you can, and you make a medium twee, and you make a high twee, okay? Okay, okay, and when I press this key, then that's you. When I press this key, that's you, okay? Here we go. Great, okay, thank you. Okay, now we've started to have an organ working. Now we need a second rank. Can I have three male volunteers for the second rank? Quickly, we don't have very much time. One, two. I don't want to run over time. I have to do somewhere else, okay? Okay, why don't you stand back there? Okay, you're not going to be seen very well. Well, you have to stand on that end because you're going to be, okay, so you should come over here. The ranks are usually, the pipes are usually arranged with the large one on the left, okay? Okay. Okay, this is a diapason rank, and they go boo. Okay, so you go low, boo, medium, high. Great. Okay, now we'll attach this rank to the other keyboard and test it and see if it's debugged. Okay. Can you see your key? You have to be able to see your key. Okay, here we go. Great, okay. Okay, now we have a two rank pipe organ. Now normally, a keyboard has 61 notes. We're not gonna do this. And normally, a rank of pipes has 61 notes also. This makes for a one-to-one correspondence, and that's mathematical jargon. Okay. Now, actually, in real pipe organs, the situation sometimes gets a bit more complex than that, in that there are some things called unified ranks, which have more than 61 notes, and then there are couplers to shift things around. We'll need to simulate just a few more little things. I need two more people. Quickly, volunteers. And it's a very easy job. You don't have to make any sounds at all. One. I'm going to have to pick a ringer. Tovar. Okay. Now, each of you stand alongside of a rank of pipes, but up here where I can get at you. Okay. Now, what you do in a traditional organ is that you have a bunch of things called stops. These have knobs that you pull and push. Am I getting myself into trouble? And when that knob is actuated, the stop knob, that allows a rank to be turned on. So we're going to put Tovar is the stop for the Blockflute rank, And you were, Eric is going to be the stop for the Borden, or Diapason, what did I say before? Diapason, okay, sorry. Okay, so now, if this arm is not actuated, that rank does not play. Okay, now we have an entire pipe organ. Okay, now we're going to play something on the pipe organ. Okay, can we have our keyboards in the ready position? Okay, now we need two things. Put your arm down, and I'll raise your arm. Now, remember, if the arm of your stop is not raised, you do not play. Are you ready? Okay, we start the blower going. Okay. This is correct. If you do not have any stops engaged, there is no sound from the organ. And my congratulations, that was very fast thinking. Yeah, indeed. Okay. Now, let's see what happens. Ah, a problem. Okay. You can relax for a second. Here's where we start getting into what good the computer can do us. we're going to use you in just a second. Okay. Traditional pipe organs are divided into something called divisions. Each keyboard, and they're typically, there's certainly almost any reasonable pipe organ has two keyboards. Most have three, some have four, some have five. Ever think about playing one of those things? And then you have another set of keys which you operate with your feet. You're sort of suspended on your bottom on this curved bench, and you have these pedals underneath your feet. You have, for a large organ, 50, 60, maybe even 100 stop knobs to control, 32 pedals at the feet, 61 notes on each of five keyboards, and everybody's waiting for a mistake in the audience. Okay, now, this is a tremendous switching problem. I really will get to you in a minute. This is a tremendous switching problem in something called the console. Now, computers have consoles, which in the old days used to have lights and switches, and nowadays computers, they've learned that they don't need them finally. And that's another session. We can argue that. And the switching is done in a pipe organ by the most incredible complex of electrical, pneumatic, and mechanical devices you have ever seen. Have you ever been inside one of these things? Take away the cobwebs, and you have these wooden levers going this way and that way and this way and that way, and you pull out a stop knob, and that opens up, that throws a relay, which opens a valve, which admits air to a bellows. The bellows pops open, pulling down a crossbar that makes a whole bunch of contacts that open a whole bunch of relays that open a bunch of valves that push up another set of contacts, and it goes click, clack, click, boom, bloop, 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 sounding like electronic music. And and then, congratulations, you're ready to play a note. When you play a note, you close an electrical contact, because pipe organs are essentially electrical devices. You close the contact. This goes through this chain of things, operates a relay somewhere in a place that can be up to 200 feet away in a large cathedral, sometimes even a little bit further. That opens up a valve underneath a pipe. You would think this would let air into the pipe. Not usually. This opens up air into a little bellows that then opens up, which opens up a valve, which opens up air, which lets the air into the pipe, and the pipe goes boop, right? That's what goes on inside large pipe organs. To make it possible to build these things, they divide the organ into divisions. And we have this case right here. We have the great keyboard, the great manual, and we have this division, which right now only has one rank. Normally, a division would have many ranks in it, and we're not going to do that. And this keyboard cannot play pipes on the other division. And that keyboard cannot play pipes on this keyboard's division, generally. This is to keep the switching inside the organ console simple. Now, finite is a better word. Thank you very much. Indeed. Okay. Now, there's another device that I'm going to introduce at this time, which pretty much completes the typical devices in the organ, and that's called the coupler. The traditional coupler works like this. Keyboards, please. Stops. Okay, now, this is called This is cool. They'll never know what goes on here when they see this photo. Okay. Everybody smile. I hadn't anticipated this. This is one of the things about programming I should have, a couple of works like this, you can connect a number of manuals together. When I press this one, there's a little mechanical lever which causes, you're right, thank you. There's a little mechanical lever that connects this key to that key, mechanically. So when I press this one, that one will also move if we have the coupler on. Let's pretend, we're not going to bother with anybody, let's pretend that the coupler is on. Are you ready? No, we should have had a pipe go too. Right. See, you're watching him. Right, okay, ready, here we go. Now you have to come down because you're coupled. These two manuals are coupled. Wow, okay, great. Okay, now this is the only way that you have on a traditional organ, you can relax again. Okay. This is the only way that you have on a traditional organ of getting one manual to operate another division other than the division that it was built into. Okay, the first reason that I saw for hooking up a microcomputer to the organ was that persons in the audience, and Mr. Jim Brennan, called me up on the telephone. He was going around to various of the computer stores saying, I want to buy a little computer because I want to run my pipe organ, and he has one of the largest pipe organs I've ever seen in his house. houses. And my project is very small by comparison. His has something over 120 ranks. This makes it one of the larger organs in the world, I think. Now, the first thing that you can do when you use a computer is that you can eliminate the divisions. Can I have two more volunteers? It's getting simpler. Much simpler. Great. Good. Okay. What you'd really want if you're... That's only one volunteer. Oh, why don't you just stand over here? Why don't we bring out all the stops over to here? Okay. Now, what an organist would really, really want... I need one more volunteer for this organ to work. How about a diode? Okay, I'm gonna stop too. Okay, now what you really want is you really want to be able to say that any keyboard can go to any set of pipes. And if we four are stops, then what you really want to be able to do is to have a stop saying the first keyboard goes to this rank, or the first keyboard goes to that rank, or the first keyboard goes to that rank. In other words, have a whole bunch of stop knobs for every rank, for every keyboard. Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, this means, excuse me for upstaging you. This means, okay. This means that you have a rectangular matrix, that's jargon, for the organist to contend with. So what you have is that for each keyboard, you have an entire row of buttons. In other words, one column of buttons for each rank of pipes, one row of buttons for each keyboard. It works like this. We're going to change, you've got to pay attention very carefully because we're going to change everything around. Okay. You are the Blockflöte stop on this keyboard. Okay. You are the Diapason stop on this keyboard. You are the Blockflöte stop on the upper keyboard, you are the Diapason stop on the upper keyboard. Okay. You're the Diapason. You're the Blockflöte. Okay, all stops to the ready, all keyboards to the ready. Can you put it out down here? Okay, and here we go. There are no couplers. What are you? Lower keyboard. Okay. Here we go. I haven't operated any stops in there right again. Okay. What are you? Upper keyboard, Blockflöte.
The girl.
Okay. So if, okay. Okay. Here we go. Okay, now we do this and this. I haven't made any change because I operated a stop on the other keyboard. Okay, now if we just operate everything. Okay, with the other hand, you hold this. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Okay. We can send you back to the ranks of the audience now. Okay. Again. Okay. Okay. That's. Thank you all very much. Okay. Now you understand in some detail exactly how a pipe organ works and what one of the things that we want to achieve with the pipe organ. Now I'm going to do the dull part and talk about the computer a little bit. Okay. I need some notes. Okay. Now the pipe organ has a number of things. First of all, when you press a key, how long do you want to have to wait before it goes boop or tweet? Well, if you've played a pipe organ, you'll know that the higher notes are pretty quick. You hit it, the thing makes contact, it makes contact, the relay closes, and the little valve opens. And something like a 20th of a second later, the thing has begun to sound. For a large pipe, we have a very interesting phenomenon. When you open up the valve, finally, after that chain of events, the air goes in and starts to play, and sometimes on a very large pipe, as much as, let me get back up here so I can see everybody, as much as a half a second later, sometimes on the really large organ, a full second later, it begins to sound. So that means you play a low note, boop, boop. It really works like that. Organists soon learn to, as you get lower on the organ, when you have some low stops activated, that you simply anticipate more and more the lower down you get. Now remember, you're playing on 5 keyboards, a pedal board, have 150 stops, and you're anticipating this thing. Okay. I don't think there's anything you can do about that on the computer. But unless you have the whole organ delayed. Now in some cathedrals where I've played, there is so much delay that it really doesn't matter. And you play a passage now, then you can sit back and wait for it to come back to you from the other side of the hall. And then if you wait a little while longer, the echo of that passage will come back, and then another echo and another echo. Okay. But can we do with a 20th of a second response time in the organ itself? Not so. As my colleague Doug White, who's sitting there, who's worked with me on this from the very beginning, has pointed out, because let's say that you have it responding as fast as a pipe in a tenth of a second. Well, it turns out that as you're playing, a human being can easily play 20 notes a second. 20 notes a second. I take back the easily. That's about a maximum, extreme maximum rate. Okay. The mark of a good organist or keyboard player is that they'll do this evenly. If you have the thing responding in a 20th of a second or so, what will happen is that it will go collecting a bunch of them and spew them all out at once instead of da-da-da-da-da-da-da, it'll go loop, 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 up the keys. So it turns out that about the worst kind of response rate that you got to have, what? Yeah. Well, yeah, okay, it bunches them. It gives you a grain, right, in lumps. You see why I need him. no, it. I mean, I'm really very, very grateful to be able to work with them. Where was I? Okay, so it turns out that if you have a grain size or a time slot of something around a 50th of a second, the organ begins to behave nicely. So this means that any computer system that you're going to have has got to read the entire state of the keyboard and the stops, all those people there and all those people there, in about a 50th of a second and get that all into memory somewhere where you can do something with it.